Okay, it's July 15th. I'm Thomas Robb.
I'm Jason Robb.
And this is Night's Party Roundtable. And we don't have Rachel with us today again, but she should be back soon. And Brendan, who normally fills in when somebody's missing, is over at the church, over at the center, and he's working over there, him and a couple other
people
over there doing some work, so...
Well, we have the...
And we're heading over there ourselves here shortly.
Right. Well, we have the Knights Party Family Congress coming up on Labor Day weekend, which is September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, literally almost a month and a half away. And so...
It's going to come quick.
So there... Well, it's coming quick, and it's flying by. But they're already over there, and they're sprucing the grounds up. They're just doing routine maintenance. And so, anyways, it's always something going on over there.
Yeah, Tom Bowie's going to be over there a little bit later, and a neighbor, they're working on the pump. And there's always some activity going on, something going on over there all the time.
Right. And,
every time we go over there, something else is being done. Sometimes I'm doing it, sometimes somebody else is doing it, sometimes I'm helping them, sometimes they're helping me.
Yeah.
And other times I'm over here working on things, and somebody else is over there. So it's a hub of activity over there. It seems to be almost all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But we got the new edition of the Crusader in a few days ago.
And it's going to be going in the mail Monday.
Going out Monday. And this is the summer edition of the Crusader. And we have a copy of it with us right now. And it's titled "America Founded Upon a White Identity." That's the premier article.
Yeah, and that's really true. People don't stop and consider that. America is the only nation that was founded by its writings to be designated as a white nation.
Right.
The nations of Europe, you know, England or Scotland or Sweden, whatever, they became white by default.
Yeah.
But when America is founded, it designated itself to be a white nation. People don't stop to think about that. They think America is founded to be a multiracial nation. And that's not true.
Well, I think it's really interesting because this article talking about founded upon a white identity goes over the different original colonies like Georgia and Virginia, where in their assemblies they prohibited the importation of blacks, slaves, into the colonies. And of course, even though you may have that in the assembly, you know, there was a lot of slave trading going on at that time. And these different states and colonies were very concerned about the fact that blacks were being imported into the Americas. And one of the biggest proponents of that was your Jewish slave traders. And England. England was bringing in a massive amount of slaves into Americas.
Right.
And the different colonies and states were concerned about that because they knew that if you had a huge non-white population, then their families were facing distinction. They were being killed and murdered because they knew what had happened in some of the other islands, you know, out in the Caribbeans, like Haiti and others,
right,
where the blacks basically annihilated all the whites. And so they knew about all that, and they ultimately did not want blacks in the colonies. They wanted a white Christian homeland for their people.
Right. And then page 2 of this edition, and people can get a copy of this if they want to. Contact us. They can send us an email. What is our email address?
Well, there's a lot of different emails that we have, and we're going to look at. It's the national office. If you're looking at sending articles and stuff like that, and a lot of people want to send articles or general information, you can send to the national office, but national office at theknightsparty.com. And you can send that email request if you're wanting to do something regarding maybe dealing with the church issues or dealing with the Christian Revival Center, which is also located at the center. Then you can do that revival@southshore.net. Or you can just call us at 870-427-3414.
Correct.
So during the office hours.
If you want to copy this edition, just contact us. Or you can use the mail, Post Office Box 2222, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. And bear in mind, it does cost money to put out the publication, put up the literature. We don't charge anything for sample copies, of course. But consider being a good white man or white woman and help pay your way and help us out, keep us this thing going forward.
Absolutely.
Reaching out to our people. If you don't absolutely don't have it, okay, we'll send it to you anyway. But, you know.
You put $5, $10, $20 in there. Yeah. There's nothing prevented from a person doing that.
Correct.
I mean, if they're going to go to McDonald's to get a hamburger, they're going to spend $5, $6.
Oh,
you know?
At least. Yeah.
And so there's no reason. I know a lot of people say, well, I don't have the money. Well, I don't want to argue with them, but you have the money. You can put $5 in there.
No, I run video games.
Right. So you
pack of cigarettes is $5 or
exactly.
$6.
So like so you have the money to help out on asking for some literature and stuff like that. So it just do your part.
Yeah.
And we have good people out there that does that.
Okay, we have here a Build Your Community. This is Ruth Parker in Massachusetts, who talks about her very first literature distribution there a while back. Well, the first one she did, actually.
Right.
And how nervous she was. And found out that was actually a lot of fun and didn't take any time at all. And then she recruited some other people to go with her. And now she's done this numerous times and just really enjoys it.
And she's done a really good job because she has recruited a lot of other like-minded people out there in Massachusetts. And the literature distribution that she conducted just about a couple months ago, and of course she's constantly doing it, so it's not like she only did it one time, that was it. But one of the first ones she ever did a couple months ago really hit the publicity out there majorly. And so the police chief and the mayor basically said they had a First Amendment right to pass out literature, the Knights Party did. And of course, others were saying, oh, you know, it's hate speech and they shouldn't be allowed to do that. And so, of course, we sent a letter to them through my law office, sent a letter to the mayor and the police chief, just reminding them that this activity is a First Amendment protected activity. We have every constitutional right to do that. And they agreed. And so this is an article, Building Your Community by her, talking about what she's done, and it makes people feel good when they're actively out there just doing something as simple as literature distribution, because it really does help spread that message.
Right. And this issue here, likewise, we have boxes of paper over there at the church, and some of those boxes will be used for the mailing, but there's a bunch of papers there that are being sent out to distributors around the country. And so those will be sent out next week also. Distributors. And sometimes these distributors are people who distribute the paper, but then maybe they couldn't afford to buy. But then somebody else who can afford to purchase papers, but because of one thing or another, maybe they may be elderly and just don't get out and drive around anymore, or they may have a sensitive job, you know, that they are concerned about protecting, and they'll buy extra copies of the paper, and then a distributor will pick them up and distribute them.
Well, she has in here, I'm going to read about a couple paragraphs in here, because, you know, so often people out there, they get involved in the white resistance, and they don't know what to do, and unfortunately, if you get associated with the wrong organization that really doesn't have a clear, concise program, they have not been involved in the white resistance for decades, then they don't really know what they're doing either. And so that's why it's really important.
Sometimes the leaders of these groups don't know what they're doing.
They don't even know what they're doing. They may be involved in just a few years, and it's really unfortunate. But this Ruth Parker, she wrote this article about her first time distributing literature, but I wonder, read this because it was really good. She said she was talking about, of course, first time meeting Pastor Rob and Rachel Pengraff. Talking with Rachel was inspiring. She had clear views on how our country came to its current state and path to follow to change it. After our conversation, I made the decision to do my first literature distribution using the Crusader. I convinced one of my new friends to take this next step with me. We were both nervous about sharing pro-white literature in Massachusetts.
When did that happen?
Exactly.
It's kind of a rhetorical question, I know, but why should a person, and I know that's the reality on the ground.
Right.
But, you know, what has happened to this country when talking about pride in your heritage is considered controversial or extreme?
And also I would like to add that, you know, when, a lot of times when people talk about the pro-white message, the white resistance, so often people think that that's just in the South, you know. But there are literally thousands and hundreds of thousands of white families in the North and the West and the Southwest and up the areas of Washington and Idaho that have the same concerns as people that live in the South, you know, because it's all about their race and their culture, and they don't want it destroyed. And so often people think, oh, if you live up in the North, then, you know, you're a Yankee. You don't have any pride of your heritage and culture. And unfortunately, you have a very small element of people that think that. And so this just shows that there are people that love our white families. But anyway, she goes on, most people we knew only felt safe sharing their views online. Even though we decided to deliver the newspaper at night anonymously, we were still apprehensive and feared the worst. Our fears were completely erased after the first drop went well. No problems, no police involvement, and more importantly, no repercussions in our daily lives. After experiencing how easy it was, I wanted to get others involved in literature distribution. I wanted to expand beyond the Crusader and also distribute flyers for pro-white websites. And then so she goes on about how exciting it was to distributing literature and that her fear was overcome by just simply doing it.
Yeah. And I want to point out, too, that we're talking about a woman here.
Right.
So often people marginalize and think it's mainly this men activity, men do. And media tells us, media implies that the white resistance is just a bunch of men. Because women got more important things to do.
Yeah.
You know, or women are all liberals, or women all support race mixing. And that is not the case. That is not true. And they put out this false fake news because they want to men and women to isolate themselves from each other. They want men to think with a narrow mind towards women, thinking like they've been betrayed by all the women in the racialist movement, or all our white women has betrayed them. And that's not the case at all. So this here young woman here, I'm not sure how old she is, but I think she's probably in her mid 20s. And maybe late 20s, I'm not really sure. And so she's out actively promoting a cause that many men are afraid to do.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I think a lot of people are going to like reading that article because this is something that most people can really connect with. The average person out there can connect with someone like this who's just in it to help preserve a future for her family.
Yeah, there's no monetary gain she got from doing that.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let me read up this article here. The Africanization of France. This is from a correspondent in France. He's a French citizen. And he talks about how, he said geographically France is in Europe, but demographically the country is rapidly slipping into Africa.
Yeah,
because there's so many migrants, immigrants from North Africa coming into France.
Well, there is, and he says here, the country is rapidly slipping to Africa, as recent data tells us. France, unlike the United States, does not allow ethnic censuses, rather choosing to follow the ideal of a colorless republic. Obviously, this does not change the ethnic reality on the ground, but it's certain that this will keep the people in ignorance. So I guess over there in France, their population is not determined upon the different races.
Well, I guess you don't. You just
don't know.
Yeah, you don't say what percentage is white, what percentage is black, or Arab, or whatever. But as he says, on the ground, you still see it. You're
right.
Still aware of it. You still know what neighborhoods to stay out of and what streets to stay away from and off of and what place you go to at night. So people still have a reality of that fact.
Well, he has some statistics here that was done by some research groups, and they're obviously probably not by the French government. But it says in 2000, 19% of all newborns in metropolitan France had at least one parent from the above mentioned regions, and these regions are from Middle East, Sub-Saharan Africa, that type of area. This figure rose to 28.45% in 2007 and up to 31.50% in 2010, or a total of 253,466 newborns out of 805,958. In other words, in one decade, the number of non-European babies in metropolitan France has grown from one-fifth to almost one-third. This medical study also provides us with even more data, namely analysis by region. It shows that in 2010, 60% of newborns in the Île de France, mainly Paris, were descended from non-Europeans. In province Alpes-Côte d'Azur, where the Le Pen National Front is particularly strong, the portion of non-whites was 43.2%. In neighboring Longwood, is 41.6%. So, I mean, he shows from these from medical studies how rapid increase the population of France is changing.
We have a picture here on that page. This is on page three of this edition of the Crusader, which you can get by writing, send us an email, like we said earlier. There's a picture here of a huge number of blacks demonstrating in France. Now, most likely, and I don't know, okay, somebody may challenge me on that. I can't prove my next statement. But most likely, these are not citizens of France. These are people that have come there, and now they're demanding a certain rights and privileges, and you know, they're going to keep demanding, and the French government keep bowing and scraping and caving in. That's why we're so much in support of Marine Le Pen. And
and what people don't understand is when they're asking for additional stuff, when they're wanting things changed, that basically means that they're wanting
to rob the white citizens.
Exactly, yeah. And they're wanting France to change the racial makeup. They're wanting France to change it from a traditional French country that we've always known into something that is not a reflection of historical France.
Well, they want to change a culture. When you change a culture, what else do you change? You change a religion. You change the laws. You change the communities.
The morality.
The concepts of morals. The concepts of what Philadelphia is.
Right.
And you change those things. You know, the idea people say, well, so what is culture? Just culture. Everybody has a different culture. But a culture envelops a lot more than just, you know, social habits that person might do. So.
And once you have a culture that creeps in and changes the prominent culture that's also in there, that is a form of genocide.
Right.
I mean, it's just ultimately it's a form of genocide because you're trying to replace one culture from another culture. And with cultures, usually that means destroying the racial makeup. We have our good friend Tom Sunic, who is used to be a Croatian ambassador or a diplomat.
I haven't read this article yet.
Yeah, but he's written an article talking about fascists and anti-fascists, the standard memes ignore the real cost of immigration. And he talks about really just again the cost of immigration over in Europe, because that's where he resides in. And he talks about how words such as fascism and Nazis are used to really help silence people, help to silence those who want to promote a white agenda, preserving your culture, how the enemy will use words like fascism and you're a Nazi or a bigot to really silence just the average person who's concerned about their children's future, a concern about the racial makeup of their country. And so this article deals with that, deals a lot with regarding Germany and France, how the enemy has been successful in those countries targeting the white people by using these words to help silence them from being public.
Yeah. Now we have an article here. Google gives $2 million to assist the Brady campaign and also Trump's, not Trump, Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg campaign, Every Town for Gun Safety. And, you know, that sounds good, Every Town for Gun Safety. I don't know. I don't think anybody's for violence in our cities, you know. So, you know, the name is kind of, but when you take away, for instance, they want to confiscate guns. Okay, so they succeeded in doing that in Chicago. Now it's Chicago, safe city. They've had like 500
shootings. Yeah, it's not a safe city.
No, it's not a safe city, but they've taken away the guns, so why isn't it safe?
Right.
I mean, they're lying to us.
When exactly. They
imply that taking away the guns or registering guns or it's a big shroud upon us, and they're lying to us, and so often people fall for it.
And they get rid of guns through supporting lawsuits against gun manufacturers, from dealers, gun dealerships. Money like, you know, to get rid of guns is to pass legislation, maybe state legislation, definitely in your liberal states, where it's illegal to have maybe more than one gun. And if you do have a gun, maybe you have to have a background check. And then if you have a background check, if you are successful having a gun, then how much ammunition can you have? And so these are all the different steps in trying to get rid of guns and try to get around the Second Amendment, is just making it hard, putting hurdles for law-abiding citizens to obtain firearms. And I think this is really interesting because in this article, we have some quotes about Ann Coulter.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the very end of it. Ann Coulter, she says, "If you compare white populations, we have the same murder rate as Belgium," Coulter said. "So perhaps it's not a gun problem; it's a demographic problem."
Yeah,
and that is the key.
Yeah, that created an uproar.
Right.
One person apologized, and she did not.
Yeah, but that's definitely true. You know, I mean, you look at any major non-white city.
Even small towns.
Yeah. And that's where you have all your, I mean, your what's called hot crimes, which is your murder rates, your robbery, your murders, batteries, assaults, your hot crimes. That's where they kind of define hot crimes. And so that in these, your non-white areas, it could be, yes, you're right, Dad. It could be your major cities or even it could be small cities.
And I get a kick out of it because you might say something to the effect, look at how bad crime is in Chicago or among your non-whites, how bad crime is. Then they'll post some picture of some guy who got arrested for having marijuana.
Right.
And says, "Here, we got crime too."
Yeah.
You know, or posting somebody jaywalked.
Yeah.
"We got crime too."
Yeah.
Well, that's why this concept, what you pointed out, or this label, hot crime,
right,
is so important. A lot of people don't understand that, what that means. Between crimes, yeah, there's crime everywhere. But there's a greater influx of what's called hot crimes,
right,
in your non-white areas. And so explain again what hot crimes are.
Well, hot crimes are considered your your violent crimes against your fellow citizen, which is rape, murder.
Oh, is meth a hot crime?
It's not, because basically meth is you're in your home and you're shooting up yourself. You know, you're not going out to someone else and forcing it on them. Okay.
Right.
And so rape, murder, aggravated assaults, robbery, anything where you're being violent, you know, causing physical harm to somebody, that's considered a hot crime.
So somebody looking at the weekend crime too, they show a meth lab that got busted.
Right.
It's not the same thing.
It's not considered. I'm not saying it's right, but it's correct. They're inside their home. They're not going to someone across the street and saying, I'm forcing you taking meth, you know. But that's usually in their own home or their own, you know, areas, and they're just doing it themselves.
Destroying their lives.
Exactly. They're
not
wasting
like
away.
Else.
Exactly.
But there's a sound in the
right. And but if they then go and obviously rob somebody and or try to get money, then that's considered a hot crime because you're robbery. That's you're
and
being
hot
something
crimes violent. Are greater in not away areas.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so that's where and a lot of people will say, well, what's your information backing that up? I would encourage everyone to go on Google, look up on the internet under John Lott. He's a very renowned researcher,
and
professor.
LOTT, correct?
Yes, John Lott. And he had written a book. I mean, he's revised a couple years, but he had written one started in the 90s called More Guns, Less Crime. And he spent 10 years taking the FBI's own data of each county in the United States. I believe there's around like 3,200 counties, maybe it's 3,400 counties in the United States. And so he took the FBI's own statistics. He didn't use his own statistics, the own FBI's own statistics and the local statistics. And he compared those states that have higher concealed weapon permits, those states that are more gun friendly, and those states that do not have concealed weapon permits or are very anti-gun friendly. And usually those coincide with the racial makeup of counties and the states. And those states, which are very much gun-friendly, I believe in the Second Amendment, right to concealed permits, their violent crimes or the hot crimes were significantly less than those states or counties that had very, very restrictive on carrying firearms or possessing firearms, which again coincides mainly with your non-white counties and states. And this John Lott, he's a professor of Harvard, Princeton, Yale, very, very intellectual person, very smart, someone that anyone can research, but get that book. He's updated several times, you know. And so he used that word hot crime. So that's why he was talking about hot crime.
The phrase hot crime, is that a legal term?
I think it's kind of a general, I don't know if it's considered a legal term, but it's a term that is associated with your violent crimes.
It's not something you're just making up.
No, that's what they the terminology.
Correct. So people out there in the world uses that phrase hot crimes in reference to violent crimes.
Exactly.
And non-violent crimes, what do they call those, cold crimes?
Maybe. I don't know.
That's not the focus.
Right.
The violence is what people focus on.
Yeah. I mean, because it's like he says, you're always going to have criminals. You're always going to have people jaywalking. You might have people doing drugs, you know, smoking.
Even white communities, totally white, 100% white community, you're still going to have criminals.
Right, yeah.
So we're not saying that all white people are like little angels.
Right. Ultimately, the test is, can you take your wife and your baby and walk downtown of a major city and not be concerned about being raped, robbed, murdered, or being some type of victim? If you're concerned about that, then you probably have a very much a non-white population. But if you have a majority of a white population, for the most part, you can be safely go down to a downtown square in the middle of the night and not be concerned about that. That's really the ultimate test. Or can you get off on the wrong neighborhood, on the bypass? You know, those are what we're basically talking about. Are you concerned about being a victim of a crime like that? And so that's what we're talking about, hot crimes, something being violent. And so the fact is, yes, you're always going to have criminals out there, but are they going to do anything to physically attack you? And so, yeah, you might have someone who's a meth and may just be sitting in their, you know, room and shooting up, but they're doing it themselves. They're destroying themselves. And so ultimately, when it comes right down to it, is that these gun laws are used to help the average family be able not to protect themselves. That's what these gun laws are used to do, and that's really their main agenda. Another article we have in here is the sodomite agenda against nature and the family. And of course, Dad, you wrote this one. And
it is agenda.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes I know people always say, well, why do you care what homosexuals do in their closet or in their homes or in their bedroom? Why do you care? How does it hurt you money? And I really don't care. I don't care if they do in their bedroom, or and I don't want to peek in their bedroom and find out.
No.
You know, but it's the agenda that they are promoting that does affect our children, and that is our concern. And so for that reason, we do have a concern about this spread of sodomy in our community and transgenderism and so on, who that is being pushed.
Well, and when people say, you know, and sodomites definitely are good at saying this, because they say, no, we're here to educate the people.
Oh, yeah.
Because basically what it is, they want us to accept their filthy lifestyle. They want us to accept their lifestyle. They want our morals to be changed. They want the concept of families and values to be changed. And that's why the sodomite agenda is really, like you said, it's an agenda, because they want people to accept their lifestyles. And what's really sad,
little children, you know, and that's 7, 8 years old that are calling themselves transgendered.
Right.
They don't even know what sex is, and they're suddenly transgendered.
Right.
And that's been pushed upon them by parents who usually by lesbian or homosexual parents who've adopted these little children.
Right.
And that's why adoption of children by homosexuals should be 100% outlawed.
Right. Well, and they always try to say, well, you know, here's a 8 or 9 year old kid, boy or a girl, you know, that believes that they're gay and because they don't want to be around other boys, they feel more comfortable being around another girl, or a girl who don't want to be around boys, they feel more comfortable around a girl. So, well, she might be gay, you know. And there has been clear studies.
Well, girls call themselves, you should be a little tomboy.
Right.
You know, that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Just because a girl likes to do things that is quite often associated with a boy, or just sometimes a boy likes to do something that is quite often associated with a girl, doesn't mean he becomes a girl or she becomes a boy. Lots of guys enjoy cooking. It doesn't make them effeminate because they enjoy cooking.
Right.
And yet they take... Or a boy who likes music or likes a violin or something like that doesn't mean that they're suddenly thinking they're a girl, or vice versa, because a girl likes to go out and work with dad doing mechanics or climbing trees and it's a tomboy. It doesn't mean that there's a boy trapped in a girl's body.
Right. Well, and there has been a lot of recent studies that have come out that said that these kids that think that they're gay, technically, once they go through puberty, they naturally start wanting, you know, they have attraction for the opposite sex.
Yeah, unless they've been ruined by the sodomites.
Exactly. But when you got people,
and you're
say,
referring to Paul McHugh. Paul McHugh was a chief of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University. This is a guy, a noted professor, a noted medical a doctor who has written on it that boys don't become girls, girls don't become boys just because they go through an operation.
Right. You know, absolutely. And so that, but the whole idea, the whole agenda of these, the sodomite organizations is to make gender as it can be assigned to anybody who feels like they're a boy or girl. And basically he says, you can't change laws of nature.
What I'm interested in, I've been somewhat of a foolish statement, a rhetorical question, but okay, they go to an operation, they have gender reassignment, okay, they hack and they whack and they slice and they dice, okay, and presto, now you're a boy, or presto, now you're a girl. Okay, I can see how they do that. Not that it becomes a boy, it becomes a deformed boy.
Exactly.
Dr. McHugh says it becomes a deformed boy or a deformed girl. Okay. I understand that, but I understand how they mystify their feelings on that. But how do when they're on the operating table, how do they change the DNA?
Right.
That's what I'm kind of curious. How do they change the DNA of the person?
Right.
I can understand how they can, like, whack and slice and dice, But how do they change it? How do they get into the DNA of a person and change the DNA?
Right, exactly, exactly.
And that's, of course, something they can't do. It's impossible to change that DNA. I'm going to take a break for a second. So, yeah, you can't change. We're back, by the way. You can't change the DNA. And so it mystifies me. How do they make this boy become a girl? How do they make this girl become a boy?
Well, because if that boy becomes a girl, you want to use it that sense. If they ever had a baby, it would be a boy or a girl. I mean, you can't change it. But ultimately, you can have a girl have it, or a boy have a baby. I mean, deliver a baby like a woman. I mean, so that in itself is it's just confusing because of the fact that, like you say, you can't change DNA.
Yeah,
it's set in stone. You cannot do that.
Yeah, what really a grotesque looking to see these women who, in a sense, they're transgendered to be a man.
Right.
And you see this, what looks like a guy with a beard, and he looks like a guy.
Right.
Then it shows a pregnant. These people are freaks.
They are.
I'm sorry, they're freaks.
They are.
And they're beyond, as I mentioned this article, and I know that perhaps some people would disagree with it, but they're probably beyond the reach of God.
Yeah.
They have already, the Bible says they've been abandoned. I give a reference there. They've been abandoned by God. It is in Romans,
right.
The book of Romans, and our first chapter. They've literally been abandoned by God. And so they're freaks. And I won't say they can't repent. I don't know, but it's beyond me.
What we do know is it is an abomination of God.
Right.
We know that is a sin that miscegenation and homosexuality are the two greatest sins, and that's an abomination. And what God will do with them after they die is up to God.
Yeah.
But
Romans 1:26 in the Bible says, that is why God abandoned them to their shameful desires.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I pointed out in this article, everybody sins. There's no righteous people. Everybody sins. But most people, they're ashamed of their sin. They know they do it, but it has still shame. These Sodomites have no shame. They have lost their shame. They boast and wallow in their sin with pride. And of course, then what happens? We have people say, well, you're not supposed to judge. If you heard that, you've been probably.
Oh, absolutely.
The Bible says don't judge.
Right.
You
know, and that's usually an easy cop-out, so they don't have to stand for righteousness.
Right.
They can just basically kind of ride the fence and just say, well, we're not supposed to judge. So that gives me excuse not to have to do anything controversial or say anything controversial. Like standing up for God is going to be controversial.
Yeah,
but that's an easy cop out, and the greatest ones I love doing that are, of course, these so-called pastors which are really just disgusting. These pastors out there that are supposed to be shepherds and watchmen, they are not. They are actually sheep.
Yeah, and good ones to follow the proud. The Bible says, "Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil." Yeah. And though so often preachers will say, "Well, that's not my calling. I'm not supposed to get involved in controversy issues. I'm supposed to just preach the cross, preach the word of God." And they want to avoid issues. Jesus was controversial. I mean, that's why he actually crucified him, because it's too controversial for the Pharisees.
Well, I sometimes you'll see these bumper stickers. They'll say, "What would Jesus do?" And I've seen sometimes a person will have, "What would Jesus do?" Then they'll show Jesus with a whip.
Yeah.
And he's whipping the money changers and everything else. Yeah. I'm thinking, yeah, that's what Jesus would do.
Absolutely.
He would be sitting there just trying to talk to them reasonably.
Right. Absolutely. Anyway, the phrase that thou shalt not judge is referring to gossiping. You don't involve in gossiping, you know, judging people. I don't like the way he combs his hair. I don't like, and then little backbiting, gossiping. Because then you become the victim of it. So that's what it's for. It has nothing to do with moral judgment. And but people like to, like you say, Jason, they like to use it as a cop-out. So, don't you know, we're not supposed to judge. You know, well, that's the case, and we might as well do away with our whole legal system.
Right.
Do away with police officers, do away with judges, do away with courts, do away with our Congress, do away with our government, do away with everything.
Exactly.
Don't judge. I mean, we shouldn't have any judges in a courtroom. And then these people here who are judging us for judging, then they're judging too.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. It's like, don't judge me. You're not supposed to judge.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's amazing. I think we should probably wrap up here.
Yeah.
Just
real quick, a couple other articles. We won't go in depth, but we have Dr. Ed Fields, who writes for The Crusader, The Truth at Last. His newspaper, Israel Haggled Over USS Liberty's Death Benefits. We also have, and which is really great, Dr. Ed Fields has been a pillar in the white racialist movement since the 50s. And so he, great man, and he writes for The Crusader for 40 years that he had a newspaper himself called The Truth at Last, and before that, was it
Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt?
Yeah.
And so a great article in there. We also have one, another article, Action Kills Fear, talking about the recent great event of Rally for Morality that was held in Harrison, Arkansas.
I want to go back to Fields for a second.
Okay.
Because he has this article here about the this is the 50th anniversary of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty, which 34 Americans were killed, several hundred were injured, in calm, sunny skies in the Mediterranean, with flags flying boldly in the breeze, and suddenly over the horizon come the Israeli jet fighters, who had attempted to, they did bomb, but attempted to sink that ship. To blame it upon the, I think it was the Egyptians at the time, who were their enemy. And, you know, this is something that had been totally washed under the carpet. People like, and I mentioned that people say, oh, that was 50 years ago. Like, oh, yeah?
Hey, we're not supposed to be concerned about that?
Right, because the same government, the same manipulation to involve us in those foreign wars is still prevalent. Just an example. We hear a lot about North Korea today. You know, what's happened in North Korea is directly related to what happened 50 years, 60, 70 years ago when Harry S. Truman, the so-called great president of the United States, fired Douglas MacArthur.
Right.
Because Douglas MacArthur, who was leading the American force, the U.N. troops at the time, against the North Koreans, wanted to advance and take out North Korea then, 67 years ago. He wanted to advance and take out North Korea. Truman would not allow him to do it. He pressured the issue, pushed the issue until Truman fired him and fired the U.S. commander in Korea. Now, 60-some years later, we have this threat coming from North Korea. Why? Not because of what happened during the Obama administration. Not what happened during Kennedy or Nixon or anything, but what happened when Harry Truman, President of the United States, refused to allow Douglas MacArthur to advance and take out North Korea when we had the opportunity to do so 60-some years ago.
Right.
And now we're facing this plague today.
Yeah. And so that's why those type of events are important to discuss even today.
Yeah.
Same thing with the USS Liberty. That's very important to talk about.
And we're still being manipulated over there in foreign war in the Middle East.
Well, any country that controls our foreign policy is wrong. And, yeah. And we
I don't care about the Arabs. I don't want the Arabs controlling our foreign
exactly.
policy.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the Israeli lobby is the most, it's the largest lobbyists in the United States, the Israeli lobby.
Here's what the opening of this one article says. On June 8, 1967, while patrolling in international waters in the Eastern Mediterranean, USS Liberty was savagely attacked without warning or justification by air and naval forces of the State of Israel. With a crew of 294 officers and men, including three civilians, the ship suffered 34 killed in action and 173 wounded in action. The ship itself, a $40 million state-of-the-art signal intelligence platform, was so badly damaged that it never sailed on an operational mission again. It was sold in 1970 for scrap.
Wow.
They damaged the ship so severely. And this is an important, this is the 50th anniversary of it, and it should be an investigation into that instead of the stupid investigation in Russia, you know. But anyway, we'll discuss some more of this paper because this is a good issue. We'll discuss some more about it next week.
Next week, that sounds great.
Yeah. So anyway, if you want this issue mailed to you, contact us. Call 870-427-3414 and during rent office hours between 10 and 5. If we don't answer it because we're on the phone with somebody else or busy doing interviews or numerous things. But ask for a sample copy or you send us an email. What's the email again, Jason?
Email, we have, it's nationaloffice@theknightsparty.com. nationaloffice@theknightsparty.com.
Or send us a letter, P.O. Box 2222. The Post Office Box 2222, Harrison, Arkansas 72602. Stick a few dollars in, or if you call, mail us a few dollars. We're not supported by George Soros or anybody from Wall Street or Madison Avenue. We're supported by white boys and girls like yourselves who love this country and really care about the future of their children. So put a few dollars in the envelope. We depend on your support from people like you. Until next time, this is Thomas Rupp,
Jason Rupp,
reminding you to love your God and to love your people.